All right, everybody, welcome to the Mets News Podcast. It's a beautiful day to be a Mets fan. I know everyone's saying, why is it a beautiful day to be a Mets fan? I can't understand it. Why would the Mets don't spend? No one wants to come to New York. Nobody wants to come to New York. Well, how does it feel now? Matt Scherzer is a New York Met. Steve Cohen put his money where his mouth is. He spent his money, his beautiful money, and I don't care what people say, this signing, book it, is going to change the organization for many years to come. The Mets also got Escobar, Quintana, Starling Marte. I know I was tweeting and putting on Instagram a lot. I'm going to do an episode tonight. But then the Mets will make another signing. And then the rumors with Scherzer happen. And I, you know what? This is what I thought. I have in my archives, take it with what you must, the New York Mets might get Matt Scherzer. It's true. It's in my archives. It's beautiful. But I was not very confident they were going to get him. So you know what? I made the executive decision as the host of this podcast to not release that episode. And if Scherzer would not have gotten signed by the Mets, I would have ultimately not released that part. Would have made a whole thing about how the Mets can't sign a big free agent. Yeah, I like the moves, but what else? There is going to be a lockout. It's true, but I love this move. Like, forget about the lockout. Forget about Baez leaving. Forget about Stroman leaving. I'm actually having to update this now. Marcus Stroman is no longer a New York Met, and that breaks during my interview with the draft expert. And good riddance. You know what? Go away. You're on Twitter. I don't like your Twitter game. You're pretty annoying, but that's enough about him. The Mets got so much better. They've improved the clubhouse. They have a pitcher that could ultimately win the Cy Young. And here's the thing. There better not be a lockout here. If there's a lockout, there are a lot of things wrong with baseball. And I get into that with the draft expert, so I'm not ultimately going to get into it here. But here's the quick expert about Scherzer. Forget about the other guys. Starling Marte is the best bat we could have picked up. He's a defensive wizard in center field. He is what the Mets needed. Do you understand what I'm trying to say? That the Mets needed a center fielder? Does it come across? Because I hope it does. I truly do hope this comes across. The Mets needed Max. They needed Starling Marte, and they needed Matt Scherzer. And Marte, I get it, is going to get old. Would I would have given him 4 years? No. But Steve Cohen has proven that he's going to spend money. That's what he's proven. I mean, forget it. Steve Cohen has proven to me he's going to spend money. And that's enough about them. I'm going to have an episode more focused on them during the lockout because free agency is going to freeze in about a couple hours. Matt Scherzer signing means to me is the Mets are going to spend money. Steve Cohen, he talked about for many, many years, or the many years he's been here, the Mets don't, we're going to spend. And that's what the Matt Scherzer signing does. I get into it more with the draft expert. To me, he's a bulldog. To me, if DeGrom goes down, he's DeGrom insurance. And if DeGrom and him are healthy, it's going to be big. Big things are coming to the Mets. That's the best way I can personally put it. Big things are coming to the Mets. And for this fan base, it's well deserved. And I don't even get into the Steven Matz incident. Steven Matz, thank you to his agent. I mean, really, thank you to his agent. Because I don't think if he doesn't pull this crap with Uncle Stevie, and thank you to Syndergaard, thank you to all the guys that said no to the Mets. Because without him, these changes don't happen. I don't think it wakes the organization up. And ultimately, with Matt Scherzer, you're going to get a guy that goes seven innings. You're going to get a guy that throws at least one complete game. You're going to get a guy that pushes these starters to be the best. You're going to get a guy that holds this clubhouse accountable. And I understand in some people's eyes this was an overpay. To me, it was not. To pull him away from the Dodgers makes the Mets a destination for free agents, which is they have not been for a very, 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 very long time. And to me, this just shows that the Mets are open for business. They spent $260 million, and they're not even done yet. I know Baez is gone, but I think they're going to get Bryan after the lockout. That's a possibility. They still have to get bullpen help. They still have to get one or two more starters. They're not even done. So Steve Cohen, thanks for MLB. Thanks for pissing them off, because we got the best pitcher on the market. I don't think there's any debate. We got Quintana, who is a good outfielder, and we got Escobar, who's coming off an all-star year, and Marte. The Mets had so many signings before this stupid lockout, they had to hold two press conferences. And what Matt Scherzer said to me in this opening press conference, and then I'm out of here, what he said to me was, I want to win. I came here to win. I didn't come here to lose. I came here to win. I came here to win. To me, that's beautiful, because the Mets have been missing, and I understand Jake is that, but when Jake to me is someone that leads by example. The Mets needed a bulldog, someone in that clubhouse that will hold people accountable, and that is what Matt Scherzer does. He pushes people to be their best. He tells the manager, no, my ball, I'm not coming out, which I love. So ultimately, I think you guys get the gist. I love the Matt Scherzer signing. I love all the signings. To me, this brings a good clubhouse culture. It's stuff the Mets need, and the Mets have a very deep bench with Jeff McNeil, J.D. Davis, even though I think J.D. Davis is gone, Dom Smith. This is going to be big. It's going to be huge. That's all I got. Let's hear from this week's sponsor. Pray. Thank you, Steve and Alex Cohen. I know. I don't think you guys will ever hear this, but to me, it needs to be said, thank you so much. From the bottom of my heart, this means the world to Met fans, and it feels good. The Mets are a big market team. Let's go, Mets. And hello, Matt Scherzer. Let's hear from this sweet sponsor, Anchor. Let's go, Mets. Mad Max is a Met, baby! All right, welcome back, everybody. You just heard from this week's sponsor. Obviously, we all know the sponsor, Anchor. Yes, the Mets just signed Scherzer, and that was part one. And yes, we will get the draft expert's opinion on it, because obviously the Mets haven't made this move ever in my lifetime, ever. But we got to start off with the football. I want to start off with the Giants, because now Daniel Jones might start. The offensive line is a joke. Nate Solder is a mess. Don't even get me started on him. Let's welcome him on first, of course. Coach, how are you doing?
As good as can be after that game on Sunday.
Oh, we'll get into that. First time in like 16 years that the Giants beat the Eagles twice in a row.
It's about time.
Yeah. In my lifetime, I was shocked when I saw it. I'm like, really? That was like when they were at Giant Stadium.
And just think, with all those years of Eli Manning, you think they would have swept the Eagles all the time with that stud.
I thought they would have done it in 2011, because I know the last time the Giants beat the Eagles in Philly was 2011, 10 years ago. So I thought, but I was wrong. All right, so what's your thoughts? I sent you the video on the offensive line. Daniel Jones is injured. Now he might play. He might be out for the season. There's like multiple reports. So you can just take it away and I'll give my 2 cents.
Well, it's kind of what I told you years ago when they drafted Saquon Barkley. Number two, you don't take a running back that high unless that's like your only missing piece. An offensive line is the most important part next to the quarterback, but a quarterback's only as good as the line too. You need a line. You can get an average running back can do good with a good offensive line. And he has just botched that lineup, overpaying for Nate Solder. You know, they tried, you know, Andrew Thomas might end up being a good left tackle, but they missed. They've missed on so many.
Yeah, and don't even get me started. I obviously sent you the video, but when I heard Joe Judge today, who I am just like, I don't know what happened in like a year. I don't know what happened, but the whole fan base is like, I'm 50-50 on him, because now that the Giants are starting to win, and they fired Garrett, which should have been done after week 3, in my opinion. I'm always the guy that said, let's give Garrett a shot.
You say they're starting to win. Let's put this in perspective. Okay, you won 13-7 at home.
Yes.
Against an Eagles team that had four turnovers.
Yes.
Four had a touchdown called back on a holding call.
I sent you that because I said Boston Scott strikes again because I figured you were up at UP doing something.
I watched the first half, and then at halftime I drove him up and I listened to the game. But you won 13-7, and we turned it over 4 times, gift wrapping this for you to beat us by 50. Now, a win's a win no matter what. It doesn't matter if you win by 50 or by 6. You won the game. But I wouldn't say Joe Judge now, oh, he's starting to win because they beat the Eagles 13-7 in one of the most horrific offensive displays in Eagle history. Where
did you see – I just want to get your thoughts on it. It popped in my head. I'm sorry to interrupt. But did you see it was like the second half and Jalen Hurts' throw? Just take the 3 points. It's a 3-3 game. And my dad's even saying – my dad, who doesn't watch football like I do, is like, what was that?
You mean at the end of the first half when he threw the interception?
Yep. Yeah,
I was like – I was, yeah, I was like Jalen Hurts, you know, we'll probably get on the topic of him later, but like there's pros and cons. I mean, I think he's has a great demeanor. I think he's a leader. I think he's a hard worker. I think he's respected by his teammates. You know, he has obviously good athletic ability. He can run, but his throwing is and his accuracy is going to be an issue. But one thing he's been doing all year is he doesn't turn the ball over. That's why they've been actually winning a couple. You hand the ball off. You throw the ball away if there's nothing there. Or he takes off and runs. He doesn't turn it over. And all of a sudden in this game, when he gets down in the red zone, he decides just to throw it to the team in blue. that throw, I don't know. At first when he threw it, I'm like, he's just going to throw it away. And it wasn't even close to being thrown away. I don't know what he was looking at.
That's what my dad was saying because he was like, I don't even know what he was looking at. Like, do you know what he's looking at? I'm like, I don't know. But back to the Giant offensive line because this really got me like agitated because I'm starting to feel like, you know, let's give Joe Judge the rest of the season. It's not his fault that Daniel Jones doesn't know how to slide properly because I know the play where he got hurt. I called it. It was the second play of the game. Remember, he didn't slide down properly. And I was like, he's hurt. And you could just tell the way he was like getting up. And then Will Hernandez, who I hate, get him off the team. How many penalties against anyway. He's like gonna go punch an eagle and I'm like, don't get called for unsportsmanlike. Like, what are you doing? But Nate Solder's starting over Matt Pear. Does Joe Judge watch the games? Does he watch them?
He's just like I think it's a lot of the code. I think Sirianni's the same thing because you paid Solder all that money. Mm-hmm. So you're going to keep playing him. It's just like Eagles drafted Jalen Reagor in the first round. I swear up above is telling him, you got to play this kid. He's a first round pick. We got to prove that we were smart. And it's just making things worse.
Yeah. I really, by the way, I think that pick, they tried to steal it from the Giants because that was going to be a Giant pick, and we got Kadarius Toney, if I'm not mistaken.
We got Devontae Smith. That's the
Devontae Smith. That's the guy who dropped the pass.
Who actually now is starting to show a little bit of emotion. He was not happy because the play was designed for him, and he's like we always saw with football, like you need to have what we call that, like a little bit of dog, a little bit of fight in you.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to want to be the guy. Like Devontae Smith is showing it. He wants the ball. He's going to go get it. Jalen Reagor wants no part of anything.
Yep.
And that's the difference. And look at the Giants. I mean, their offense, you have
Kenny Golladay.
You have good skill players. You have, you know, Barkley at running back. You know, Daniel Jones, while he's never going to be a top quarterback, he has his moments. If you just put a line up there, even just an average to a slightly above average line, your offense is so much better.
Yep. And here's the thing about Daniel Jones why I'm like, and I think most of the Giant fans are starting to run out of patience. And again, I don't follow the Giants religiously. Like, I have you on to do the draft preview and everything, but that's pretty much it for me till the season starts. That throw he made against Tampa Bay where he just threw it to a guy that was on the ground. And it was
that
like,
was
what are you throwing it to?
And that was awful. The play design just was flat out putrid.
Yeah.
As Daniel Jones rolling to the right, throwing across the field to his running back and hits the lineman that was on the ground. Beautiful play.
That was when I literally screamed at my television, we got to fire Garrett now. Like, and you just saw Daniel Jones look at Jason Garrett like, what was that play design? It makes me look like an idiot. And I'm like, yeah, he's not wrong. He was like, you could read lips.
Well, if you go back to the Eagles game, that play a half where Hurts threw the interception, at the time the score was 3-0.
Yep.
And I was sitting there, my son and I were watching it. And I said, as awful as the Eagles are playing, if they go in and just kick a field goal here, 3-3, they get the ball at half, they're winning this game. I mean, because they were completely dominated. And if you're tied and you got beat that bad, you're winning the game. And then that interception, I'm like, that's it. That completely changed the whole – 3 points changed the whole thing for me.
Yeah, and if we really want to go into the game, to me, it was that the replacement for your center – I don't know who that is. The guy that got called for the holding. Why was he holding there? Like, Boston Scott was gone. Like,
yeah. The first holding penalty – now, this is not – I never blame the officials or anything because that – but first of all, it was not a hold. He pancaked the guy. And, again, I do watch a lot of football, and I watch a lot of stuff at the end of the – during the week. And you know who Brian Baldinger is?
I've heard of him.
He's a former offensive lineman. He does a lot of stuff for NFL Network. He came on, and he said, you know, that was not a hold. He goes, he finished his block and pancaked him. The problem is the official sees the end of the play with the guy getting thrown to the ground and he thinks it's holding. He said, you have to know when to kind of hold up football. He said, but that one, but the other one, was he didn't need to hold.
Exactly. And I'm like, I texted you because obviously I think if the longtime listeners of the show is, I think Boston Scott is a giant killer. He is a giant killer, except when he fumbled. I was laughing so hard. Of course he had to fumble.
Of course.
For you guys. But anyway, I texted Boston Scott touchdown, and then they said holding. I'm like, why? What? And then I saw the play. I'm like, why is he holding there? He's gone. It's late in the play, too. And that was just like, all right, that's really what I said. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. You tried to just keep giving us the game at the end.
Yeah, we did. And then the fumble was even worse because, like, the fumble was like – no one touched him.
The fumble, Eagles are going down driving whether they scored or not. You get the ball back. We have 3 timeouts, but you can pretty much – a first down ices the game. You get backwards. You only lose a couple seconds off the clock. We get the ball back, and we start driving again. It's like, oh, my God. And then Jalen Reagor, you know, takes one off the face mask in the end zone, and then another one, you know, jumps for a ball that's going to hit him in the chest. What the heck?
No one was around him, too. That was like – he was gone at the end of the game.
Yeah, that would have been the miracle in the Meadowlands 3.
I know, and the best part is it's like, I don't know why you're trying to throw it there. Like, I don't know Freddie Kitchens at all. Like, I know he was with the Browns. He called one game because of COVID, but let's be honest, Jason Garrett was calling from home and saying, do a stick round, because that's what he loves. Anyway, why are you throwing there? Just hand it off to Barkley. Maybe he gets 2 yards. Maybe he spins around and takes off an extra 2 seconds. Like, I don't get that.
Yeah, I guess they were looking at it. It's one of those things. He probably had one read on the play, a very safe pass to get a first down to end it. If it's not there, just get down. So I think that was their thinking. First down ends the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they run the ball at Barkley, he's probably not getting the first down anyway. So
the problem is we have a terrible – did you see that line drive punt? Well, you didn't see it. Maybe you watched the film.
I heard it, I was like, oh, because Reagor was backfielding. I'm like, oh, great. I'm like, I just hope he catches it. And then thinking they got the ball at almost the 40-yard line to start. I'm like, we have a chance.
I really just don't. Jalen Hurts cannot throw the ball, though. There are some instances where – that was my first time, I'll be 100% honest, where I sat down and I was like, you know what, forget Washington last year, even though I thought he was playing well. But I'm like, let's sit down and actually watch this guy. And some of those throws.
Yeah, he was That's what's like. Eagles and Giants are in a similar situation that they're not happy with their quarterbacks right now. And this draft, which we'll get to closer to draft time, I've already started. There's not a single quarterback you would take that would start over Daniel Jones or Jalen Hurts right now.
That's what they said on The Fan, which is the Giant radio network, which, and they were like, there's no one in this draft class that's good.
No, like all of them right now would be behind Daniel Jones and Jalen Hurts just because they're experienced a little bit. Mm-hmm. So you can't blow a draft pick on that. And Giants have 2 first round picks. Eagles have 3, a great year to get a quarterback, and there aren't any. So we're both in the talk now is Russell Wilson.
And I don't want him.
And the Eagles are both the two teams that are going to make a play for him. And I have mixed emotions on that.
See, Russell Wilson's older now, so he needs a line.
Yeah, he's 33. He's going to be 34 soon. He hasn't played well since coming back from his hand surgery.
And they rushed him back.
Even if you put Russell Wilson on the Eagles, he doesn't have anybody. I mean, why would he want to come here? He has better receivers in Seattle. And now if we give up all our draft picks to get him, we can't draft one. Well, even if we did, we'd pick the wrong one anyway. But, I mean.
I feel you there.
And why would he want to go to the Giants? His complaint in Seattle is his offensive line. He's been the most hit quarterback in, like, the last decade. Why would he want to go to the Giants, which has a worse offensive line, maybe?
Now, going back to the game, this just popped in my head because, like, did you see the Giants' 1 touchdown pass was basically the guy caught it with, like, below the waist?
I could not believe he actually caught that. Because right away, the Eagles players said, no, it hit the ground. So I'm like, all right, I was like a first down play. They would have scored on the next one anyway. But
yeah, because the pass interference call, which was terrible, like on Ingram.
Yeah, I saw the replay. I'm like, there's no way. And I'm like, oh my God, if he did catch it.
It was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't get to do this a lot. Like, in my 4 years in high school, the Giants, I don't think ever beat the Eagles. No, they did that. Yeah, 16 they did. One time at home. You know, it's like, this is like a rare occurrence. Like, I had no faith the Giants were going to win the game. We were texting over the week, and I think I said 50 times, no, they're not going to win.
I thought the Eagles, I was worried about the game. But I knew it was going to be a close game. Everybody said, oh, this is a shoe-in for the Eagles. Eagles-Giants, not a shoe-in. Yeah. I knew it was going to be close. I thought it was going to be a one-score game. But if you would have told me before the game, though, that the Giants only scored 13 points, I'm like, oh, God, we did. We beat them. We beat them by double points because we'll run the ball. When we did, we ran for over 200 yards. But then we just turned it over.
I think they're the first team in modern NFL history, like in the past 20 years, that had almost 300 yards rushing, but still lost the game.
Yeah, because, well, when you turn it over 4 times like that, think about it. The first interception, even if they just kick a field goal there, all right, you got that. The next interception, if they kick a field goal there, there's 6 points right there, and now we have a tie game. And if we're in that situation, he might not even throw it to Rager at the end. They might just kick the field goal and win the game. So you just can't, no matter what, you just can't. You can't turn it over 4 times and think you're gonna win. You can't.
I gotta say this about Joe Judge. Can we go for it on 4th down? Like on a windy day, we're gonna have Graham Gano, and I love Graham Gano. I think he's one of the best. He is the best kicker in the league. If you look at his numbers over the past 2 years. Why don't you go for it? It's 4th and 1. I don't get that. Like I was like, I don't understand that. And it gave the Eagles good field position. Of course, he threw the turnover. That's something that bothered me. You're not going anywhere.
Yeah, but today's like years and years ago. That's like old school football. But now, once you get in the opponent's territory and it's like 4th and 3 or less, everybody goes for it now.
Except the Giants.
Usually need touchdowns to win. Field goals won't do it, but
hey, I give Joe Judge credit. All his wins, all 10 of his wins have been by kicking field goals, 99% of it, except the Dallas game last year, because Jason Garrett, for some reason, always liked to be creative against the Dallas Cowboys. Oh, in the Saint game, so 98%. So I guess a lot of my audience wanted to know, what's your official thoughts on the Eagles? We'll get to Hurts now.
The Eagles last year won 4 games. And I think the odds this year, they're in Vegas, was like 5.5 wins. So they're 5-7. So I think they're doing better than I thought. And if I look position by position, offensively, they're young. They have a young left tackle who's going to be really good. They have a rookie starting at left guard due to injury. He's going to be their starter. You had a set, well, our other right guard is out, so they've had a second-year player, but he just got hurt against the Giants. So we have 3 young offensive linemen to build around. We have 3 young backs. Our receivers stink, but they're all young. We have a young tight end in Dallas Goedert. So our offense, you put a couple pieces. I think if you get in the Eagles' offense, even if they keep Jalen Hurts and he continues to just get a little better, if you get one more playmaker on that side, I think their offense is good. Defensively, they're getting old. I mean, they have no pass rush anymore from the outside. Their linebackers average at best.
I didn't realize that Fletcher Cox has been in the league for 10 years. They said that on the broadcast, and I was like, wow, has it really been that long?
They're going to need – I mean, that's why this draft, when it comes draft time, I mean, their defense – I mean, Brandon Graham's out for the year. He's going to be 34 next year, so who knows what he's going to have left. Derek Barnett stinks. He's going to be a free agent. They just signed Josh Sweat to a too big of a deal to be a full-time defensive end. They need defensive ends. D tackles, they'll be okay yet. Linebackers, their middle linebacker, TJ Edwards, is playing great. Their other linebacker didn't play against you. He's out, Davion Taylor. Mm-hmm. So he has potential. But they're going to lose their one corner, Steven Nelson. You still
do you
have
– think Fletcher Cox is back? I'm just – he's back, okay? I didn't know.
His contract is too big. They won't be able to trade him.
What about cutting him? Is cutting him not an option?
No, because it is signing bonus. It'll count too much against their cap, I think, next year. I think they have
so
another year. The problem is their safeties are old. You know, Ronnie McLeod's old. They have Harris back there on a one-year deal. So this draft, I mean, this is a great draft for defense. I mean, they have 3 first-rounders and a second. With those 4 picks, they could – I still think they need to draft an offensive weapon there, but – 3 or 4 of those picks, if 3 of those picks are good defensive players, I mean, their future isn't as bleak as I thought. But it comes down to the quarterback. What do you do?
I think you have another year of them. I mean, this is only his second year, so give him another year.
That's what I would like to do. See, Eagles, in my opinion, Eagles, when we get to draft talk, what I think their strategy is going to be, if they don't trade for like a Russell Wilson, they're not going to use those 3 first-round picks this year. If they can package one of them to pick up a pick for next year so they have 2 next year when maybe some other quarterbacks come out, that's what I think they'll do. I don't think they're going to draft 3 first-rounders because they don't want to pay 3 first-rounders. I think they're going to use 2 of them, and then you're going to trade one of them and trade out, pick up maybe a later pick this year and an early pick next year.
That would be smart. I think Howie Roseman, and I think you would agree with me, I'm pretty sure we all wanted him gone. All the Eagles fans wanted him gone. I think he's pretty much proved it wasn't all his fault.
Yeah, it's not all. I mean, his early picks have just been bad. When you look at his mid to later picks, he's
been good
players. I mean, their left tackle was a 7th-round pick. Their starting left guard was a 2nd-round pick. Jason Kelsey, maybe the best center in the last decade, was a 5th-round pick. I mean, he's finding people later in the draft. He's just missed on his early picks. Badly. I mean, could you imagine if we had Justin Jefferson instead of Jalen Reagor? If we had Justin Jefferson out there, it would be a completely different team.
Yeah, and I think that covers everything that the Eagles and Giants. Big question. Can't believe I missed this one. Eagles making the playoffs this year? Game and a half out. No?
No.
They have the easiest schedule.
Yeah, and they also just lost one of the easy games.
Oh,
so they're 5-7. Optimistically, if they win 4 out of 5, they're 9-8. You still have the Vikings in front who are playing pretty well. The Rams are still in front in the wild card who are not playing well.
It's the Odell curse. Like I texted you. It's the Odell. I don't know if I texted you. I might have texted. It's the Odell curse.
That's the team that if I was a fan of, I'd be banging my head off a wall. They mortgaged everything for this year. Everything. They've given up draft picks. They've signed big names. And if they don't win, they're going to be in the basement for years.
Yep. You're right. It's all Odell. I think that Odell, I think he's a cancer in the locker room. I think you agree with me on this.
He is. I think he is. And they panicked when their one receiver, when Robert Woods, went down. You know, not that I would want DeSean Jackson, but they had DeSean Jackson and let him go. He goes to the Raiders. So you let that one go, problem.
Where is he now?
Bring in another problem.
I wonder where DeSean Jackson – he's still in the NFL, right?
With the Raiders. Coach Webber would know that because he caught a touchdown against the Cowboys on Thanksgiving.
let's transition. Before we get to the baseball stuff and breaking news, Marcus Stroman has signed with the Cubs. Good, good. I'm not going to miss him at all. He really is not – he's a head case. That's all I got to say. How about the Cowboys? Let's just transition right into them.
Well, I must say, I'm enjoying the fact they're struggling now, but it also scares me. Because you can't be hot for 17 games. So they're going through a tailspin now in the midseason, which leads them potentially to get hot here in the end. Because they've had their fair share of injuries this year. So they weather this storm. And if they can
COVID
get
too.
Healthy, if they can get healthy, watch out.
Yeah, I agree. But it's just nice. I wish Coach Webber would come on. We could get an outlook from a Cowboys fan right now.
The other thing they got to worry, like home field advantage in the playoffs. I mean, they've had a golden opportunity the last couple weeks to kind of put themselves in that position with like the Rams losing, the Bucs struggling a little bit, Cardinals with Kyler Murray being out, lost some games.
Colt McCoy
had a little, but now that they have 4 losses. You know, they almost have to win out to get that home field advantage.
They're not going to win out, though. They're going to find a way to blow a game.
Well, they have to play the Cardinals again. So if the Cardinals beat them, forget it. And you still got the Bucs and Green Bay's playing well. So this could, if they have to go to like Lambeau or something like that, that's going to be tough for them to go do on the road.
Aaron Rodgers, I'm getting these questions in now. Aaron Rodgers, what's your thoughts on that? Even though it's a few weeks ago, I mean.
I don't know. You know, he's that prima donna kind of quarterback, but God, is he good though? I mean.
He's Brady, but turn it up times 10 with the personality. At least Brady now, he's like funny. You know what I mean? Like.
Yeah, I mean, what Rodgers did, didn't like it.
I don't think anyone did.
But on the field, though, I don't know. Who name a couple quarterbacks you'd rather have in a big game other than him right now. You won't find many.
Just Brady. If you want my honest opinion, Brady.
Yeah, Brady might be it. I mean, I wouldn't take Mahomes now in a key game over him.
Patrick Mahomes, he played the Giants, and the Giants almost won the game.
Yeah,
he is a mess.
He hasn't been as good this year. He's been a turnover machine. But yeah, Aaron Rodgers, though, on the field, and he's clutch.
Yeah.
He's clutch.
And he doesn't have an offensive line either. Like, his offensive line, that's what he's been moaning about.
Yeah. They're missing their one tackle. They're I don't know if their one tackle is coming back. They're missing their one main guy, which has really hurt them. But I'll still take them.
Yeah. I mean, what the Steelers and the Lions game, just going I watched that game. The Giants, I think, were on their bye week, or they were playing Monday night, and I was like, let's just watch the Steelers because the Jets are just – oh, God. Dude, if you don't beat the Jets this weekend.
When the Eagles play the Jets this weekend.
You're 11-0 against the Jets.
That's good. That means we're due to lose. That's good.
You have any wood to knock on that I just said that?
Yeah, well, we're due to lose.
Yeah. Hey, maybe it's that turf in that life. That's what everyone says. It's turf.
I don't know. And Jalen Hurts is available. He says he's going to play. We'll see.
Oh, he has an ankle injury. I can't believe I missed that. Like, what's up with that?
He hurt it. He hurt it before the final drive. He was hurt. He came out. He still went back in with. But like I said, I think he's tough, and he's not going to want to give up. I mean, after his performance this past week,
he looked embarrassed. He really looked.
I think he's the kind of guy. He's not going to go hide from anything. I think he's going to want to come out and, you know, try to redeem himself. By hitting the ball 40 times.
I think that covers everything that I want to talk about in NFL. You got anything?
No, I think that's it for now.
Most surprising team, I guess. That's my thing. Because it hasn't really been a lot, in my opinion. I think our predictions are the Vikings, maybe. We didn't predict
the
to be this.
The Vikings have been playing well. That's a little bit of a surprise.
Brady struggles. I don't think for a guy that's almost 50.
Yeah, I have to expect it. Struggling doesn't shock me so much because I think when you come off a Super Bowl win, it's hard to get that edge back right away.
Yeah.
And when they return their entire team, I think sometimes you get a little complacent. So that doesn't shock me. Still on paper, I mean, they're still possibly the best team.
Brady in the playoffs don't.
In the AFC, well, the Browns have had injuries.
The Patriots. They're the shocker.
The team that's playing good that's disappointing me right now, the Dolphins, because we have their first-round pick. And for a while there, it was looking like it was going to be a top-five pick for us. But now the Dolphins go ahead and win a few. And they actually, I think, have the easiest strength to schedule the rest of the year.
They have the Giants Sunday. So you have to root for the Giants this Sunday. Oh no, that's not good.
I need them to lose to get in the top 10. Because right now the Eagles, I think, have the 9th pick, 10th, and 14th, something like that.
I don't know. I know they have a lot of picks. And the Giants have the Bears pick, and the Bears are winning. Well, when you go to Detroit on Thanksgiving, I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
I don't think the Bears going to win. Bears won't win too much more. Don't worry.
Yeah, I mean, who do I root for when the Giants play the Bears? Like, that's something, like, I have to see where both teams are.
Yeah, but you got to root for your team to win.
Yeah, you're right.
It doesn't matter. Either way, if you win.
It's still our pick.
Yeah, you get that. And if the Bears win, you still get your pick that moves up. So either way, you're getting – one of you are jumping up in the picks. So it doesn't matter.
Yeah, and Gettleman's fired. I don't want to get into that because we already spoke about it multiple times. But let's get into the MLB. This is like the lockout's coming. Like, they hate each other. Like, Matt Scherzer, who signed with the Mets, is like a player rep, and he's ready to go to war. Like, they said they have a war chest to sit out the whole season for players that don't make any money.
I haven't really followed the reasoning behind it. What is the main reasoning behind them wanting a lockout?
Well, obviously, it's number one's money.
Yeah.
Number two is they don't like – and I agree with the players on this. After I heard Matt Scherzer's and Freddie Freeman's, like, whole statement about this was they don't like teams that just tank, like the Pirates.
Uh-huh.
The Reds are starting to tank again. They don't like them having the number one draft pick then. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I do agree with that. Minor, that's pretty much it. Like, that's like the two main things. There's got to be like 100 different things that they won't get. And they don't want a salary cap. They want the luxury tax to be raised.
That's the thing. Like, it's okay. So if they want the luxury tax raised, that is just going to give the big market teams a better opportunity to spend more money and continue to win.
Yes.
But small market teams have to rely on higher draft picks and younger players under salary control to win. So it's like, if you want those teams to stop tanking, you have to even the economic playing field, I guess. I mean, well, like, look at the NFL has a salary cap.
Yes.
So everybody's playing with under the same rules. Well, it's not the same in Major League Baseball. I mean, the Pittsburgh Pirates can't do the same as the New York Yankees.
Yeah. Or the New York Mets. They just spent almost $250 million in 4 days.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, all right, I get their argument about not wanting to tank, but what other option do these teams have? They don't have the ability to spend. So you got to rely on younger talent. Like, look at I think of the Florida Marlins over the years. You know, they always had the best, like, young prospects. But then when it comes time, they can't afford them, so they have to trade them off or let them walk to the big market teams.
Yeah, Miguel Cabrera was a Marlin.
Who went to the Yankees?
No, the Tigers.
No, who's the outfielder?
Oh, the outfielder. Miguel Cabrera's the third. I don't know. Stanton.
Yeah, Stanton. Yeah, he goes to the Yankees. Yeah.
The Reds are trying to trade away their whole pitching staff. They're open for business, they said. They want to trade away Gray after the lockout. They want to trade away Castillo.
Yeah, so it's not just – there's so many problems with that. You just –
And the only reason the Pirates don't sign anybody, like the Pirates, Matt Scherzer's, and I love the Matt Scherzer signing, as you probably heard in part one. I'm happy the Mets spent money. I've been waiting for this for years. I'm pretty sure I complained to you about how the Mets didn't re-sign Zach Wheeler about money.
Mm-hmm.
His salary is projected to be more than the Pirates' payroll.
Yeah.
In 2022.
Yeah. So what do they expect, like, the Pirates to do? The Pirates can't pay that.
Yeah.
So their only option is to get high draft picks, hope they hit on them, and those young players can perform for them. But if the young players perform for them, they can't afford them, and they got to get rid of them anyway.
Yeah, the Pirates and the Reds, the Royals. No, the Royals spend money. Let's take them out of it. Like, they're middle market teams that spend occasionally, I guess. Who are teams that don't spend?
Like the Devil Rays. Like, the Rays. Are they just that good at drafting and player development? Because you don't see them signing the big guys, but every year, there they are.
Yeah, exactly. They're like the outlier, I think, in this whole situation. I think the Mariners are spending. They just signed the Cy Young Award winner.
You got the Minnesota Twins.
The Twins. It's shocking how good the Rays are. I think you would agree with me on that.
Yeah, it is.
They find guys that other teams, literally, they release. They pick them up for a year. Then they go get their big contract, and they stink again. They're also, players are upset. I'm just reading off a list here. They're upset about the ball being changed, and they didn't tell the MLB. They didn't tell the players. They were using two separate balls that came out yesterday. So I could get that.
What's the deal with what's different with the balls?
The pitchers are saying grip.
So there's what, no seam? They're already like, the seams are already kind of small on them.
Exactly. I think the pitchers are upset about the pine tar usage because Trevor Bauer, who I don't think will ever pitch in the MLB again because of other issues off the field, used that to win the Cy Young and kind of screwed Zach Wheeler and Jacob DeGrom, the other two finalists that year. So I think that's what they're upset about. I know But there's a legitimate shot here the way Scherzer was talking. And again, I'm only using this because he was the only, he's the player rep. And he spoke today because he was introduced to the Mets, like to the fans and the media. He's saying they're ready to sit this out if they couldn't get a deal done. He doesn't want that to happen, but they're ready.
Well, if you go back to
some minor league players.
We talked about this, I think, last year with baseball, yes. How it's different now. It's not like there's hardly any strategy anymore in baseball. You want pitchers to throw 100, you get pitchers to rear back to throw 100 miles an hour and hitters to swing for the fences with their launch angle. So, I don't know.
I think a lockout, how long do you think the lockout's going to be?
I have no idea. It's just.
It's frustrating, though. Like, I'm very frustrated by this.
It is. I don't know. I might be wrong on this, but they got to worry, too, about their fan base. I mean, baseball.
You're not wrong.
I mean, baseball, I mean, the younger generation really doesn't even follow baseball because the game is so slow.
The average fan, and I did this for a report from one of my classes, is 60 years old.
Yeah, because it's too slow of a game. So now you lock out, and people are not going to be happy with it. I mean, great, you know, Max Scherzer, you know, good for him. He gets what he gets as much as he can. But he's making over $40 million, and he's complaining about how things are well. How about this? How about have a salary cap, Scherzer, where you can't get paid more than $20 million a year, so it can't get spread out amongst the other teams? How about that to solve it? But no, I'm going to get my $4 million.
The thing with this lockout is it's not going to hurt. It's going to hurt minor league players. That's what it's going to hurt. That are not really have. They don't have a voice in the Players Association. I don't. At least I don't think so. I could be wrong. No, someone correct me on it. That's what it's going to hurt. And minor league teams. Now, if this lockout ends in February, then it's no big deal. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, the offseason, I think you would agree with me, is slow to begin with.
Yeah.
So it gets me very angry to keep it PG. It gets me very angry we have to even have this discussion.
It does get frustrating, like, with – again, I don't know if this is going on in baseball, but I know it happened in football. Like, they get ticked off. They said the owners are making too much money. It's not, but they're the owners. It's like any company or business. The owner of the business or the company is gonna make the big bucks. It's his company.
Yeah, you're right. Not everyone's like Steve Cohen that has a day job, as he calls it. Like, that's my favorite thing he said today. He's like, how were you able to spend almost $250 million and go over the luxury tax? He's like, I have a day job. I'll make it back.
It just boggles my mind that they're going to complain about the owners, this and that, but they're making, as players themselves, like every kid's dream to go do and play a professional sport, and you're making $40 million, and you're going to say you're unhappy about how things are.
Yeah, and I'm excited. I'm really excited to see Matt Scherzer and DeGrom pitch together. Of course, knowing the Mets, like, they won't stay healthy, you know, but.
That's what I told you.
Yeah, DeGrom, you texted me that.
But I'll tell you, if they do stay healthy, oh God.
Oh yeah, God. That's dangerous, right? Like, you just thinking about it, like, not for me.
Man, that's not going to go well.
You're right.
Sooner or later, Scherzer has to slow down. What is he, 37 years old?
He'll be 40 by the time the contract's over. So, yeah, 37.
Starts breaking down this year a little bit. Maybe they'll limit his pitch count, you know, baby his arm a little bit, and then you can't.
Did you hear what he said?
Then you can't afford today, a bullpen, and your bullpen blows everything. That's what I gotta hope for.
Yeah, it probably will happen. Actually, now I'm thinking about it, because we have Edwin Diaz. Oh, don't even get me started on him. What a loser! Like, I'm sorry, but why is he in the league? Like, I don't get it. He is like, there are some pitchers in the league where it's like, yeah, they throw 99, but they hit him in the face. Or they give up home runs.
Well, the Phillies got rid of Hector Neris.
I was very upset about that move.
You have to sit there and watch him try to throw his split-fingered fastball 90% of the time. And then when he tries to sneak it sounds funny, sneak a 95-mile-an-hour fastball by somebody, but he can't, and he gets rocked out of the yard. At least I don't have to deal with that.
Yeah, and we'll get to the Phillies in a second, but the last thing for the audience that I want to say about Scherzer is the one thing he said today, which I loved, he said, I want to pitch more. I think pitchers should go 7 innings. I think that's what builds up arm, I don't know, like what's the right word, like strength or whatever.
Arm endurance, I guess.
Arm endurance. And throwing 97.
I've been on this in the past, but I was told, who was I, was it the head of the Phillies rehab? He was talking and he said, all these pitch counts are putting kids on. Like you see all these Tommy John surgeries now with pitchers in their early 20s, in their teens.
It's like a rite of passage.
You didn't see much. That years ago, and they're doing all these limiting the pitch counts. And he said that they have to do that now because kids are throwing too much when they're really young and pitching year-round instead of just pitching 3 months out of the year. So then what's happening is these kids are pitching year-round, and they're getting hooked up with trainers that are trying to, you know, keep their arm in shape, but they're working out like 13-year-old arms like they're 30-year-old people.
Yes.
And their arms are broken down already. That's why pitchers can't go as long when they get older, because their arm was used up in when they were young.
That's what Scherzer said, and I agree with that. And that's what you and I have said multiple times on this podcast. And I think that's why he's able to get this type of money right now.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I said it last year, even with Wheeler. I mean, that guy was a bulldog. He went 7 innings every time.
Yes. I think he led the league in complete games.
Yeah, something like that. His I forget what his average innings were per outing. I mean, but you know, a lot of these other kids that come up, no, pitch count.
Aaron Nola's on the pitch. I don't know if he's still on the pitch count. I remember he was on a pitch count.
Nola usually went. He would go as far as he was terrible last year, but he wasn't one to come out early. He would get into the hundreds.
The problem is with that is they get into the hundreds too early because they can't throw strikes.
Yeah.
Unless you're Wheeler, Scherzer, or DeGrom.
That's the other problem with throwing with power, being a strikeout pitcher. Well, to strike somebody out, you need a minimum of 3 pitches, but usually it takes more. Rather than having an at-bat, there's only 1, 2, or 3 pitches, getting somebody to roll over on a ground ball or pop one up, the strikeout causes you to throw more pitches.
You're right. Like, as a pitching coach at Division III, we tell our guys don't strike people out.
Yeah, that's right. You hit your spots.
Exactly.
You know, and you think back in, well, you were young, but a lot of the older people, they're saying, you know, when the Braves had like Tom Glavine and Greg Maddux on the mound.
John Smoltz.
Greg Maddux wouldn't even get drafted these days with how hard he threw. He was in the mid-80s at best, but man, his ball moving, pinpoint control.
Mm-hmm.
And he was never hurt.
Yeah, and it's sad. I think the game of baseball is in a lot of trouble. And I don't like Rob Manfred, the commissioner, but you can go back into the archives to listen to why I don't like him. Let's get on to the Phillies, and then we'll ask you a few rapid-fire questions like they like at the end of the episode. We'll get into something else. But they're quiet. They were supposed to be spenders. They're quiet. Really quiet.
They are quiet. I mean, there's some gaping holes on this team. And what's bad is, I mean, they signed Realmuto, you have Harper, so you have these cornerstones that you're going to waste. I mean, who's going to be our center fielder? Who's going to play left field for us? Are you going to put Didi Gregorius out there at shortstop again? I mean, he was abysmal at shortstop. You know, mm-hmm. Alec Bohm was supposed to be our mainstay at third base, and he ended up going to the minor leagues. He was shot. So, I tell you, I don't want them to go to the DH. I do not. But if they do, it helps the Phillies because you can move Bohm to first base. Then Hoskins becomes your DH.
Yes.
And on some days, Hoskins can play first, and you can extend Realmuto's career a little bit by having him DH on some days instead of catching all the time. But I think their defense, you know, you're stuck with Gene Segura at second. He's okay at second.
He has a year left on his deal, right? He can't have that much longer left.
No, I think he has one more year. But up the middle, besides Rene Muto, they're so weak. Center field, they are weak.
I'll call it as I see it, as someone that doesn't watch the Phillies every day. They're old up the middle.
Oh, they are old. Yep. And they don't, and their farm system is terrible.
Oh yes, it is.
So they had nothing down there that they're looking forward to saying, oh yeah, we got this coming up. That's what's scary. So they have to rely almost on free agency, but
they haven't made any moves. Joe Girardi has been really surprising. He has not lived up to the expectations I expected him to be.
Yeah, I thought he'd be more of the blue collar kind of, because that's how he was as a player. You know, he was like the dirtball. I thought he'd be really good in Philly. That's what kind of got people Philly like. And maybe he does it behind the scenes, but I'm so sick of analytics too. I know it has its place and its part, but my God, like whatever happened to having a feel for the game?
You're not the only one, Coach. Like, I think you're not the only one. People that watch the games don't understand it. Like, again, I think it has a place in the game as well, but oh my goodness.
Yeah. I mean,
a spreadsheet.
That was part of the great part of coaching, when how is the game going? How does the pitcher look? You know, I don't care if he's at 95 pitches. If he looks good or looks better now, I don't care what the analytics tell me if it's the team's third time through the lineup. I don't care. if I have DeGrom on the mound and analytics say, oh, man, the third time around the lineup, you know, the average jumps up so much. If this guy's throwing 100 miles an hour in the sixth and seventh inning and they're not touching him, I don't care what analytics are telling you. I'd rather have him on the mound than go to my bullpen.
You're right. And that's what the game's missing. And I'm hoping Matt Scherzer, at least for 3 years, can bring that to the Mets, that mentality. Yeah,
I mean, as much as I don't like the Mets, I mean, the Scherzer deal, I mean, I like Max Scherzer. I mean, he's the kind of guy I want on my team. He's a tough, tough son of a gun, you know. I'd put him on the mound any day. You know, he's going to battle you. He's not going to give in to you. You know, it's a great signing for you, as much as I hate to say it, it is.
Yeah. How does it feel to know that Gabe Kaplan won Manager of the Year?
Well,
the guy you hated.
Maybe part of it just proves that sometimes the players make the manager. I don't know. Because in Philly, I couldn't stand the guy.
You weren't the only one. He was getting made fun of, like, nationally. ESPN made fun of him.
Oh, God. Bring back Charlie Manuel.
He was the hitting coach under Gabe Kapler. When they brought him back, I was like, that's who we're bringing back. The Mets brought up Phil Regan, and then it was like the 80-year-old vulture. He played with Sandy Koufax. And the Phillies brought back Charlie Manuel, and I was like, are we going old school here?
Yep. Give me Charlie.
Oh, man. I honestly think he's a very underrated manager. I think – I don't know.
I've watched some shows about Charlie, because he comes across as the guy that can't speak, and you know, people would make fun of him the way he would talk. But the players have come out afterwards and they love him. They said, but he was tough. Like, he didn't make it public what would happen. But behind the scenes, you know, if he needed to address somebody, he would address them. So that's what I like. And I hope Joe Girardi does that, but I don't know. But
Jimmy Rollins, I watched the Philly broadcast when they played the Mets, because it gets blocked out, the Mets broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
He was saying that how much that Charlie Manuel would rip into him.
Uh-huh.
And he was in an all-star season in 2009. You're not doing this right. You're not doing that right. I might have to bench you. And he's like, bench me. He's like, yeah, because you're not hustling down the line.
Yep.
And Jimmy Rollins said, that forever changed my outlook on the game. And that's why you always saw me hustle down the line.
Yep. And that's why we love those Philly teams. That's all. That's like Philly fans get such a bad rap. If we don't boo you, then yeah, we might boo if you do bad. But if you show you care and you're given everything you got, we love you. Like, we love Chase Utley. Chase Utley can go 0-for-4 with 3 strikeouts. But he's going to bust it every time. And we appreciate that. We it's just hate when you sit there and have the nonchalant attitude like you don't care. And
that's why Scherzer is loved by the Mets fans before he threw a pitch, just to go back to it. It's like, because he said, I'm going to do everything in my power to bring home a championship. And that's what the Mets have been waiting for. And DeGrom does.
I think the Mets need that attitude because with the situation that happened with some of their players last year with the fans, you know, I don't think Max Scherzer, I would think him being the leader would come in and would talk to those guys.
That stuff would never have left the clubhouse with an experienced
manager. Here's a guy that has been a winner, Drew, that has won a World Series. You know, so you better listen to me because this is how it's done and this is how we're going to get there.
Yeah, and Javi Baez isn't back. Conforto's gone. Syndergaard. I was upset about the Syndergaard leaving, but then after you get Scherzer, it's like, okay, go. Stroman, as I said earlier, is gone. So they're bringing in a whole new group. And all these guys are hard workers. Marte's a hard worker. I obviously said this in part one. But all these guys the Mets have brought in, I love it.
Yeah, you got it. I mean, you still have your main pieces, but a lot of it is culture.
Yep.
It's the culture in the clubhouse. It makes a difference. Like I said, I'm being a Philly fan, but that culture in that clubhouse when you had the Rollins, the Utleys,
Howard,
you know, stuff, and you had Ruiz as your catcher. You know, you had that in the clubhouse. It makes a difference. And in a 162-game season, you're going to have some ups and downs. But you can't do what the Mets players did when they were having the downs like they were doing. You know, you need that clubhouse to keep it together. And you got rid of some of that baggage and replaced it with better clubhouse guys. And it's going to pay off.
Conforto to the Phillies.
What's that?
Conforto, I texted it to you. He's coming to the Phillies.
He is?
Oh, not officially, but that's my prediction.
Oh, I saw that. I saw Coach Weber's about his guy, Castellano.
Oh,
potential. He would be a good fit. He'd be a good fit because he could fill a couple different holes for us. Heck,
yeah.
You could sign anybody. It would fill the only places we don't have a hole is catcher and right field. Everywhere else you can. And I'll stick with Segura at second because Segura offensively is going to hit around 300. You know, he'll be okay. But other than that, man, we need help.
Yeah, you sound like the – I think the Mets need more big bat. I think Bryant would be perfect. I don't think they're going to get Bryant, but we'll see. All right, now it's getting to the end of the podcast here. Penn State blew it. Let's just be honest. We both love Penn State. It's the one sports team we can agree on. I coach at Penn State. I'm in the grapevine, I guess. They stunk.
Well, they did sign Franklin to a 10-year, $75 million.
How did you feel about that?
That's $7.5 million a year, and he went 7-5. So if he would have just won a couple more games, he would have made $8, $9, $10 million a year.
Yeah.
And now they lost their defensive coordinator to Virginia Tech.
I saw that. What, he left yesterday, if I'm not mistaken, a couple days ago?
Yeah, so, and he's struggled since when he lost his offensive coordinator, Moorhead, a few years ago. He has not been able to find, their offense has just struggled.
Could we get the overtime rule out? I watched the overtime.
Oh, my God. I was so glad. I had tickets for that game. My wife went. I stayed home. I was so happy because it was raining and cold and it took forever. That was just – nobody wanted to win.
It's a stupid rule, two-point conversion. It's a stupid rule. I hate that.
Yeah, especially when you can't score.
Yeah. And then when we do score, our defense is like – well, not mine. The Penn State defense decided to just give it up.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. They can't close out games, in my opinion.
Their offense. They take Jahan Dotson off of that offense. They might not score a point.
I don't even watch the games religiously, but I'm like, they're worse than the Giants' offense at some points.
I don't know how, because every year now, James Franklin, that's his big thing. He's supposed to be this recruiting whiz, and he gets all these great recruits. He gets these great recruits and doesn't develop them. And then he complains about the transfer portal. He takes advantage of the transfer portal as much as anybody. His best defensive end he got from Temple. His defensive tackle he got from Duke. One of his running backs he got from Baylor. His kicker, I forget where he got him from. He gets all from the other schools too. I hate the transfer portal. That's another show.
Oh, I got to start filming for the – not filming, recording for my season, because I made a calculated decision that I have to get interviews done about other topics, and then I could do like a 10-minute fill-in segment or 20-minute. Because during the season, my uploading was just re-upload episode. Just, it was bad. Like, maybe I don't know how I could do it this year, but I have a plan. But I don't want to go too far ahead. Man, but who's Nick Dawkins? What does he still play? What position does he play? Like offensive lineman or something?
He's back. He's one of the reserve offensive linemen at guard.
Is he good? Like, I don't know. Like, that's how much – I'll be honest. I don't watch college sports.
I don't sit there. I didn't study Nick. I mean, I know Nick. He's a great kid.
Yeah, he's a great kid. Really he's nice.
Great kid. He started with football late.
He was a lacrosse player because he went to Springhouse, which is the same place I went to.
And I had him. I mean, but his size, and he has some athletic ability, and his family bloodlines. You know, his dad was an NBA player. He had a cousin in the NBA. His other cousin is starting left tackle for the Buffalo Bills. So there's an athletic bloodline there. And when you're 6'4", 300 some pounds like he is, and he looked like a baby face yet. He looked like a 15-year-old kid. Yeah. Now, I've seen him once or twice since he's been at Penn State. They got him in the weight room. I mean, he looks the part. I mean, he knew going in there as well that he was going to be a developmental player. He's going to have to sit there a couple of years. So this is his second year. We'll see what happens. I hope he does well.
I hope he gets drafted.
That'd be nice.
Hopefully the Giants. Yeah, we both said at the same time. Is The Walking Dead back on yet?
No, they're waiting for the next season. But
you still watch.
Television last night. One of the best Seinfeld episodes was on last night, the Keith Hernandez episode. You ever see that?
Yeah, yes. Which one?
It's the one where it's the Magic Loogie episode.
And then it was, who was it? One of the other Met 86 players.
Roger McDowell,
who wasn't even on the team.
Yep, that's one of the best episodes with Keith Hernandez. I like that one.
I watch Always Sunny in Philadelphia, which is a little more
not. It's not sunny right now. It's miserable. Well,
it's not PG, I guess. That's the right word I could put. But I think it's Seinfeld on drugs. That's basically how I describe it. I like that show, though. I get a lot of laughs out of that show. Did you start watching Curb at all? Like
Curb Your Enthusiasm?
Yeah, you haven't watched that one yet? I think you haven't even watched the Seinfeld reunion one where they actually had an episode of Seinfeld in the episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
No, I didn't. Now I'll have to check that out then.
I'm telling you, you would laugh so hard. It's an episode
of Seinfeld. I gotta laugh.
It's an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm, and then they do like Seinfeld scenes, but then they're themselves too, and then like they get all like douchey would be the right term, but not like bad, like funny, like. They do like a two-part episode. Like it's funny. I would recommend it.
That might have to be my next viewing.
I think that covers anything. Anything you would like to say?
Nope. I think that's good.
All right. Thanks for coming on. The audience loves you. Like,
I do have my draft board 1.0 started. I'm just waiting. I have all the people down. I'm just waiting to see if some other people declare for the draft and some opt out to have my first official board. But don't worry, the Giants, with their picks this year, they can solve their offensive line in the first round. There's already a couple guys that will be sitting there for them that will solidify their line. Hopefully they don't pick them.
This is the Giants. We don't even know who the general manager is going to be. It'll probably be a Joe Judge pick. Oh, God.
You can put my name in. I can help you.
Yeah, I could try.
Yeah, throw my name in there.
Hey.
I can be a consultant. just get me one of the VIP passes to the combine, to the Senior Bowl, and I'm good. I'll have their first and second round picks nailed for them.
I'm surprised that you don't already have that. I know you have connections.
Well, I'm thinking, you know, if I retire in a couple of years, I'm going to need something to pass my time. Maybe that'll be my second career.
Would it even be a career? You love that stuff. Would it even be a career?
Oh, no, it wouldn't be. That would be enough. That's my dream.
That's
my dream.
I know. Speaking of this, this popped my head out. Someone from the morning call listens to my show. I guess it's a guy that left the morning call. I don't know his name. And I ran into him, and he says, I listened to your show. And I'm like, oh. I said, that's good. Like, I don't know how to respond to that.
You don't know like, who it is?
I follow him on Twitter. I know he left the morning call, like, a couple years ago. I think Coach Weber would know. He used to be come through all the baseball games. He was bald.
Schuler?
I think that's who it is. He left, like, 2 years – before the pandemic, I think. Like, right before.
Oh, no. Oh, God. I know who – oh. Miller.
No, yeah. He's like, I listen to your show, and I'm like, oh, that's great. And he's like, how did you get Galusi to come on your show? And I said, what do you mean? And Weber, and I'm like, what do you mean? They're like, they used to hate talking to me. And I'm like, I don't know. I just have the magic touch.
No, I used to talk to him. He was good. He was good. I thought he was one of the better reporters that we had. I think he did a good job.
Yeah, some of them.
Just meant me because he would always follow us. And, of course, you know, unless you win the state title, which we didn't do, the last game we always play is a loss. So that's the last time I get to talk to him every year is after a tough loss. But, no, I liked him.
He used to say getting you for an interview was so hard. Like, Coach Weber's not as bad. And I know this for a fact because Coach Weber, I was with him for 3 years. He doesn't like to do them, but he still – you know, he does them. He says, getting you sometimes to just do like a sit-down interview or something was difficult. And I'm like, I never have that problem.
I don't remember Steve. That Steve Miller, if that's the one. I don't remember him ever asking for a sit-down interview.
I don't know, like, if you just meant like the whole morning call in general, because other people that covered you, I don't know. Like, we didn't get.
I don't know. I'll tell you, I was never comfortable doing an interview or. Because I know there were times when, like, Keith Groller would have his radio show and invite me on. I would never go by myself. I'd invite other people along with me because I just didn't like going by myself.
Coach Weber did that one during the pandemic, and I said, you know what, at this point, it's like, I'm not coming back. I started this show. He has no excuse now. Now that I heard that, it's like.
I think RCN did one after we went to the state finals. They did a TV show. And they called for me to go on, and I said, I'm not going on if it's just me. I said, I won't. They're like, well, who do you want to bring on? I said, have it just bring the whole coaching staff on. I said, it'd be like a Seinfeld episode if we're all on. I said, so I'll do it then. I just did not like to do it by myself.
But Coach Fade, anything's a Seinfeld episode with him. I mean, there were so many times we were just laughing. It would get, like, bad, like, during trial. Not about players, just about other things.
Uh-huh.
And it would just get, like, the players would look at us like we were crazy. I found one interview before I did this because I study all my guests. The one interview I found of you was Get to Know the Parkland Coach, and it was so interesting.
Well, I don't know which one that was.
It was just an article. And, like, the questions they were asking, it was like they were not. I'm like, I understand why I didn't want to do that interview. They were boring.
I don't remember.
Yeah, it was like 10 or 15 years ago.
Jeez.
I know. That makes me. All right, let's end it.
All right.
This has been an edition of the Mets News Podcast. They have Scherzer. Dreams do come true. Subscribe. Stay safe.